All right, Alexander, let's talk about the war in Iran, or the war between the United States and Iran. It is a war again, yeah. Is it not?
It's absolutely a war. I mean, to me, it looks no different from what we saw in March and February. Missile strikes by one side against the other, missile strikes by the Iranians. The Strait of Hormuz essentially closed again. We are exactly where we were before the ceasefire at the start of April was agreed. And I mean, you know, the memorandum of understanding is now, I think, thrown into the waste paper basket. I mean, that didn't last very long.
Yeah. Just an observation about this third round of this war. This is about controlling Hormuz now.
Yeah. It's entirely
about
that.
Taking and controlling Hormuz. And as we discussed in many videos in the past that we did on this subject, the United States, along with Oman, they were trying to use the southern route, the Omani route, to wrestle control of Hormuz from Iran. Iran did not like it. They started to hit tankers, and here we are.
And here exactly we are.
There is a debate, and it's a legal debate, I guess, which you can also weigh in on, which is the point five of the memorandum. Who broke it? Iran says the United States broke it. The United States says Iran broke it. That has to do with Hormuz and who was going to monitor Hormuz and control Hormuz. Ghalibaf actually put a post on X about it, claiming that the United States, they were the ones that broke it, because in point five of the memorandum, it says that Iran is going to, over the 60 days, is going to monitor the passage, ships passing through Hormuz. You have international waters, you have territorial waters, you have the Oman route. By the way, Oman also put a proposal to Iran, and they're examining it now, the Iranian officials, where they suggested splitting the monitoring activities of Hormuz, the security and monitoring. Iran gets their part, Oman gets theirs, and there'll be no fees on the passage of either route.
Yes, indeed. Well, let's talk about the legal situation, which I know is being talked about quite a lot. I think it's actually quite clear, but different from what people are talking about, because people are talking about the memorandum of understanding, which, of course, as we pointed out in program after program, you pointed out in program after program on your channel, is not actually a contract. It's not a treaty. It's not a deal. It is a memorandum. It's basically points of agreement between two parties pending a final agreement. Now, if we are talking about international law, which ought to be what governs control of the Strait of Hormuz, my own view, and I know some people will disagree with me here, as far as I'm concerned, it is a maritime, a free maritime waterway. Iran accepted it as such before the 28th of February. Iran is now trying to assert rights over it, which it had not previously asserted. This is independent of the question of whether the Strait of Hormuz falls within Iran's territorial waters. I think if you were to take a case to the International Court of Justice and argue on that basis, is what Iran doing right or wrong, then after 10 years of litigation, the International Court of Justice would probably come round and say what Iran is currently doing is wrong. They are asserting rights that they had not asserted before, that they hadn't really claimed to have before, and they'd accepted the status of the Strait of Hormuz as an international waterway, and that's the legal position. I think that is the underlying legal position. Now, as for the Memorandum of Understanding, the key thing to say about the Memorandum of Understanding is that the United States, I don't think, is in a position to quibble about the wording of any particular article, because it has not signed or acted in terms of the Memorandum of Understanding in good faith. If you look at the Memorandum of Understanding, there were all sorts of things that each side was supposed to do. Iran was going to administer the Strait of Hormuz. Exactly what that meant was left unclear. The United States was going to take various steps, unfreezing assets, paying them over to Iran. There were supposed to be negotiations, substantive negotiations, to discuss Iran's enrichment program and the full eventual lifting of sanctions. Critically, there was supposed to be a agreement that there would be a ceasefire, not just in the Strait of Hormuz and the Persian Gulf, but also in Lebanon. None of those things have happened. What has happened instead has been that the United States, together with Oman, has tried to implement just one part of the Memorandum of Understanding according to its own interpretation, which Iran can legitimately, it seems to me, contest. It's tried to get ships through the Strait of Hormuz in that kind of way. I think, understandably, the Iranians would say this is unacceptable. They'd fired warning shots. They told tankers not to do this. Things escalated, but they didn't escalate to the point where the United States, I think, was justified in saying that Iran was in total breach of its undertakings under the Memorandum of Understanding. And I think it was the United States ultimately that took the big decision to relaunch the war in the way that we have seen. So on the Memorandum of Understanding, Iran, I think, has a very strong position in terms of international law. It has a very weak position. International law really is beside the point in this conflict which we have at the moment, because, as I said, it would take at least a decade before we had a final decision on the legal issues, and that's not relevant to the situation we see today. The United States agreed a package of proposals, of ideas, with Iran. It has not implemented them. That is why we're in the crisis that we are in.
In terms of international law, how does control of Hormuz or the standing of Hormuz differ from today with the Memorandum of Understanding to before the Memorandum of Understanding? Would international law interpret the U.S.'s starting of the conflict, attack of Iran, differently in terms of Hormuz when Iran closed it, as to today, where you had a Memorandum of Understanding and now you're looking at another closure, or you do have another closure of Hormuz? Would these be two different situations in court, in a court of law?
I would argue no. I would say that the question of the Strait of Hormuz is governed by the law of the sea and by the various laws that are developed around that. And the fact that the United States has committed an act of aggression against Iran does not entitle Iran to violate the provisions of the law of the sea. And as for the Memorandum of Understanding itself, well, to repeat again, that is not a final agreement. So something that is simply a declaration of intent cannot alter the underlying position set out in the various in the laws of the sea. But again, to repeat, this is all to a great extent academic, I mean, literally academic, because we have an actual situation where there was an attack on Iran and Iran acted in self-defense in certain ways. And the United States is now attacking Iran again because it has not fulfilled the commitments it made under that statement of intent, which was the Memorandum of Understanding. So I think that trying to bring in the law of the sea into the situation really isn't very helpful at this time. That is my own personal view. International law is not like most conventional types of law. And I'm not going to pretend I'm an expert in it. If somebody wants to come back and push back on some of the things I've said, Well, they're welcome to. But I think the absolutely critical thing, the basic thing to understand is that before the 28th of February, the Strait of Hormuz was open to all maritime traffic with Iran's agreement. The reason it is now closed is because the United States attacked Iran. If the United States had not attacked Iran, the issue of the Strait of Hormuz would not exist. Now, that is an argument against Iran in law, but it is a much more powerful argument against the United States in terms of policy and politics. If we go back to points you have made many, many times, the United States created this entire issue about Iranian nuclear enrichment, despite the fact that it already had an agreement, the JCPOA, which imposed restrictions on uranium enrichment by Iran. The United States walked away from that agreement and created the crisis that is alleged to exist around uranium enrichment. And in the terms of the Strait of Hormuz, the United States, again, took an entirely stable, well-understood situation in the Persian Gulf, where the Strait of Hormuz was open to all traffic. It attacked Iran, and it attacked Iran despite the fact that there'd been multiple warnings from many, many people that if that happened, the Strait of Hormuz would be closed. So in both cases, the United States has created a crisis where previously none existed. And going back to the absolutely key point that you made at the very start of this program, the entire issue now, the reason that all this fighting is taking place is over the Strait of Hormuz. That already condemns US policy, because before it attacked Iran, the Strait of Hormuz was open. It was the US that set in train this whole set of situations, this whole issue, which is causing it to go to war today.
Well, the second round of the war, not Operation Midnight Hammer or whatever it was called, but the 60-day war was about uranium enrichment, right? Yes. And that has to do with the JCPOA and the Trump administration walking away from the JCPOA, and it led to what we had with the 60-day war. Mm. Now the war that is unfolding is about controlling Hormuz. It's not about uranium enrichment.
Yeah.
But we had a type of understanding, the memorandum of understanding, which had a point in there about Hormuz. Now, that is being argued and disputed as to what was Iran's role and what was not Iran's role and what was the situation with Hormuz. Can we use the Oman route or what's going on? But the United States tried to circumvent it. They found a loophole, or they created a loophole along with Oman to say, you know what, we can just direct ships through this southern route.
Yes,
and it's our understanding that we're going to remove the leverage of Hormuz from Iran, without maybe consulting with Iran on point five of Hormuz or working with Iran. On providing security and administration to Hormuz. And instead of doing that, we're just going to use this southern route to bypass.
Well, exactly. I mean, you put it exactly correct.
And that created Iran's response. And now
absolutely.
We are where we are.
We are now where we are, because the United States was not acting in good faith. They took this memorandum of understanding. They treated it, this way that bad lawyers do. You take one bit of it, ignore all the others, read the actual article the way you wanted to, twist the words a bit, pretend to yourself that this means that Iran doesn't really control the Strait of Hormuz, which it clearly did before the Memorandum of Understanding was signed, and play tricks. And tricks in this situation have blown up in everybody's face, not just the US, but everybody's. Iran, because it finds itself again in conflict with the United States, the United States because the Strait of Hormuz is closed, the rest of the world as well, because we are, in a way, passengers on the ship, which we can't get off. So this is not clever policy. If the United States had wanted the Strait of Hormuz to remain open, it should have moved forward much more, with much better good faith to implement the provisions of the Memorandum of Understanding. But as we pointed out in many programs, it did not sign the Memorandum of Understanding in good faith. It tricked Iran into letting the Strait of Hormuz partially or mostly reopen because the oil reserves were becoming depleted, and it thought that it could walk away from all of the other obligations or commitments, maybe more commitments than obligations, that it undertook to see through in the Memorandum of Understanding. So there it is.
So a sea blockade now is possible, or reinstating the sea blockade on Iran. Mm. Blocking oil from going to China, that could also be something that happens in the near term. And the U.S.'s situation, the global situation on oil, is worse than what it was when the 60-day conflict started. So, I mean, we might end up at the exact situation where we were when the MOU was starting to be negotiated, which is complete blockades, Hormuz closed, Iran blockaded, oil not able to get out, oil not getting to China, a conflict that's unfolding. The Gulf countries are getting hit by Iran. The United States is hitting Iran. But we're in a position where the U.S. reserves and the global reserves are much lower than where they were.
You are absolutely
right. Kicked off. So I mean, it's the net effect is it's much worse. We're in a much worse situation than where we were 60, 70 days ago.
You're absolutely correct. You're completely correct, which begs the question of why are we in this situation at all? You would have thought that given all of the realities that you've just outlined, the reserves are much lower, the inventories are far more depleted. We've heard lots of comments now about the critical shortage of Patriot missile interceptors. This is something we'll no doubt talk about in other places. But given that the inventories are depleted and the oil reserves are depleted, why are we back where we were previously? Well, one has to say this because the United States finds it impossible to retreat. What did we say? What have we said so many times about the neocons who basically control U.S. foreign policy, that they have no reverse gear? They had no reverse gear. Instead of accepting the realities, coming to a genuine agreement with Iran, which, as we have discussed in previous programs, is in the US's long-term objective best interests. Instead, what they did was that they thought that they could play fast and loose with the Iranians, and we are in exactly the position that you've just described.
How do we get out of this?
Well, I don't know that we can, because the other problem, and this is where it gets even worse than you said, because yes, the situation is objectively worse than it was, but it was the other thing that's happened is that the Iranians already had massive mistrust of the United States before. The whole proposal to agree a temporary ceasefire and sign the MOU was controversial already in Iran. It was only possible to agree it with the Iranians, because the Iranians were subjected to intense pressure from their friends, particularly China. Now the Iranians can say, look, we did what you asked us to do. We signed the memorandum of understanding. We acted in good faith. You see where we are. The Americans have no reverse gear. This time, we are not going to be fooled again. We are going to stick to the original policy that we had back in March. We don't agree anything on an interim basis with the Americans. We will only agree to relax our control of the Strait of Hormuz and our attacks on American bases in the Middle East and other facilities in the Middle East if the Americans agree with us a final, complete, satisfactory agreement covering all issues between the United States and us and binding in international law. So I think that's what the Iranians are going to say. Now, there will be enormous pressure again from all sorts of people to try to get them to shift their position. The Persian Gulf states will be furious. They'll be furious with the Iranians. They will be criticizing the Iranians because it is the Iranians who are closing the Strait of Hormuz. Modi in India is furious about this. He telephoned Pezeshkian about a week ago, and said the Strait of Hormuz must remain open. China does not want to see the Strait of Hormuz closed. So there is this array of countries around the world that is going to try to lean heavily on Iran to shift its position. But every single foreign ministry, every single government will also be aware of where the ultimate problem is, that the Americans never follow through on what they promise.
What will Russia and China do?
Well, this is a good question. Now, I think the Russians, for them, it is all very straightforward. They've always said this is a war of aggression. The attack on Iran is a war of aggression. Russia is massively sanctioned by the United States. It's also itself the target of massive escalation by the United States. They feel a sense of affinity with Iran in this struggle. I saw this in Russia when I was there. I saw this, by the way, both at elite levels, which we've discussed. I also saw it at what you might call popular levels. I attended a concert whilst I was in Russia, and there was an Iranian performer there. And it was extraordinary to see how the audience responded to it. So the Russians will back Iran, and they will continue to supply weapons and technology and intelligence assistance and goods and food and probably fuel to Iran to help it get through the conflict. China is a different matter. The Chinese have found the Iranians very difficult people to deal with. This closure of the Strait of Hormuz is very problematic for them, not just because it interferes with the exports of oil they receive from the Middle East, which it does, but that is a problem China could probably overcome, but because China does not like action taken to close international waterways. It would oppose that with the Strait of Malacca. It would oppose that in the Straits of Taiwan. It's worried about American talk about imposing sea blockades on China. For all of these reasons, the Chinese do not want to see things like this happen. But again, I think the Chinese are very angry. They're angry to some extent with the Iranians. I think they're even angrier, however, with the Americans. And the Americans have not helped things, because what the United States do after the fighting resumed, it attacked a railway, it destroyed a bridge on that railway. It was a bridge that was destroyed inside Iran, but it is a railway bridge used by a railway in which China invested, partially built, and was very much part of China's economic export plans. And the Chinese are already apparently infuriated by this. And there were reports directly after, in fact, not reports, directly after this destruction of this bridge, China imposed a blockade on exports by China of helium, which many are seeing, or some are seeing, as a response to what the United States has just done. So it's quite possible with it we will see gradually China begin to shift its position, take a more sympathetic line towards Iran the longer this conflict continues.
Yeah, because it's aimed at China, or at least China. A good part of this conflict is aimed at China.
I have been told by somebody who, a Western, I should say, who lives and works in Beijing, that every single taxi driver in Beijing says it, that this war is really ultimately about China at the end of the day. This is universally understood there.
Well, I mean, there's a part of it that is directed at Iran, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely.
And of course, you have the U.S.-Israeli dynamic, which is absolutely focused on Iran and regime change and creating chaos in Iran. But but the neocon, the chessboard strategy, is focused on China.
Absolutely. Yeah. And here we have it, because what we now see is, because of this chessboard strategy that the United States constantly follows and constantly plays, what has actually happened? The United States is now committed to what looks like a long duration conflict with Iran, which is getting assistance from Russia and is likely in time to start getting assistance from China too. The United States is also already involved and has been involved for some years now in a long duration conflict with Russia, which is also depleting its inventories and is causing problems with the US's relationships in Europe. And what does the United States do? Does it take a step back? Does it think through, well, maybe this isn't so good, maybe taking on all these adversaries all at the same time is maybe a mistake? No, they just carry on. It's full steam ahead, get into conflicts, escalate those conflicts all together at the same time, and hope that something will play out to your advantage. It seems very, very strange to me, but this is what the neocons do. It is where they always lead the United States.
Yeah, that's the neocon strategy. On the other side of things, Russia and China, they play the long game.
Yeah,
and they show a tremendous amount of restraint. At least Russia shows an incredible amount of restraint, and it doesn't lead the United States, or definitely not the neocons, doesn't lead them to the negotiating table. Showing restraint, it actually emboldens them. China, we'll see how China plays this one.
I would argue that
we'll
the Chinese,
if they get more aggressive, if they get aggressive, I think the verdict is still out as to how China will react.
I'm going to say something. I think both China and Iran have been exactly the same as the Russians. They too have been incredibly restrained. Bear in mind that Iran never attacked anybody until it started to be attacked itself in 2024. Then the first missile strikes on Iran. Iran pulled its punches. Iran sat down and negotiated with American negotiators. It did so back in May, June of last year, even as the United States then carried out, together with Israel, a covert attack on Iran, attacking its nuclear sites, killing some of its military officials, killing some of its scientists. Then, despite that, Iran returned to the negotiating table, was prepared to make concessions to the United States, was then attacked again, had its supreme leader killed, and then again went and agreed further negotiations with the Americans and signed the MOU. Now, if this is not restraint, I mean, I don't know what is. And undoubtedly, the Iranians have been pushed to do this by their friends. The Russians have also been pushed to exercise restraint by their friends. And as for China itself, it too repeatedly shows an extraordinary ability to act with restraint towards the United States. It has not, for example, completely cut the United States off from supplies of rare earth. It's only now taken steps with helium. It only a few weeks ago started to take steps with tungsten. This despite the fact that last year the United States waged an economic war against China, imposed massive tariffs against China, did all of those things. And yet the Chinese also show extraordinary restraint towards the United States. And I think that this is a pattern that all of these countries follow. And one can understand why, because the United States remains very powerful. There is a sense that if you provoke it, the reaction you will get will be extreme and very dangerous. You want to try to avoid getting into that situation for as long as you can. And you try to build yourself up as much as you can for when the eventual attack comes. But in every case, always, the neocons will argue that it's a sign of weakness and appeasement. They did this with Iran. They said that the nuclear facilities had been reduced to oblivion. They said that Iran had no air defense system, that its missile inventories had been depleted. We saw that that wasn't true, but that hasn't stopped them attacking again.
Yeah, I thought Iran's military was completely knocked out.
Exactly.
That's what Trump was telling us.
Exactly.
For 60 exactly. days. And exactly. they're launching retaliation strikes exactly. against exactly. U.S. bases and the exactly. Gulf countries.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So they weren't knocked out.
They weren't knocked out. No. How we get into these situations? Well, I mean, you know, we've discussed the neocons many, many times. Until and unless the United States finally has a reckoning with these people, we will see the United States get back into these situations again and again. And unfortunately, I think we have both come to that view, to the view that there is no foreseeable way in which the United States will have a reckoning with these people. They are far too embedded in the political system. They have far too tight a grip on U.S. foreign policy. They lead the United States into one conflict after another, but they never learn lessons. And they always insist on further conflicts over and above the ones that they have previously led the United States into. Senator Lindsey Graham, who's just died, is a case study in this.
Now they're calling him a patriot. Trump is calling him a patriot. Trump is saying flags at half mast for Lindsey Graham, who hated Trump. Graham hated Trump.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
He didn't like Trump at all.
No.
But you know, Trump is mourning Graham, Ursula mourning Graham, Boris Johnson, Mark Rutte, Carney, all the globalists are BlackRock, Mertz, right? They're all hailing Graham as a patriot, as an ally, as a friend.
Yes,
chief neocon,
Lindsey
Graham,
correct?
Who has brought so much war to the world, so many terrible things to the collective West, to the world, but also to the collective West because of his neocon ideology. But everything that you laid out as to why they show restraint, because of fear that if they did not show restraint, then the neocons, which effectively run U.S. foreign policy, would do something terrible to the entire world.
Yes,
but you have to wonder when do you stand up to them? I mean, you know, you don't want to do anything because you're afraid that they're going to do something crazy.
Yes,
but because you don't stand up to them, they continue to do crazy things.
Well, I think that's right. I think that is absolutely correct.
You know what I mean?
Correct.
It's a weird.
Yes.
It's it, I understand why they show restraint.
Yes.
And everyone just everyone always says, well, you know, Putin doesn't want to get into World War III. That's why he shows so much restraint.
Yes.
But he's also emboldening them.
Yes.
To escalate to World War
III. Precisely.
Iran, so where's the solution in all of this?
Iran is the same. As I said, Iran has bent over backwards.
And where Lindsey Graham goes, another 10 neocons will
take
up.
His place.
Yeah.
Will take his place. I mean, Iran has entered into agreement after agreement with the Americans. I mean, in all the litany that I just laid out, I forgot to mention the JCPOA. Negotiated, agreed, voted on by the UN Security Council. And the United States just walks away and tears it all up and imposes massive sanctions on Iran. So, and yet, despite that, the Iranians still go on negotiating. China, too, as I said, China shows incredible restraint.
Russia, too. All of them.
The Russia going all the way back, you could argue, to the Gorbachev years, and even beyond, even to the era of detente. I have to say that everything does eventually have a limit. Perhaps we haven't yet reached that limit. But I think as the sense develops that the United States, perhaps not quite as powerful as people thought it was, maybe the time will come when people will just say, well, we have to take a stand. I think Iran is very close to that point now. I mean, the business with the Strait of Hormuz, this, as I said, this playing fast and loose with the language of the Memorandum of Understanding. I think what it has done is it has undermined those forces within Iran that did advocate restraint, people like Pezeshkian and Ghalibaf, perhaps Araghchi too.
Yeah. All right. I guess we'll end the video there. Is there anything else you want to mention or say, or are we covered pretty much everything?
I think we have.
For now.
We'll just see. For now. Until tomorrow, until the next iteration of this and twist and turn of this. But
there
at
might
the
be
moment,
peace. I mean, there might be a return to the memorandum or something happens.
Something like
that. But eventually we're just going to slide back into conflict, absolutely. Right?
I mean, that is the critical thing that Iran itself has to understand. I think there are plenty of people in Iran who do understand it, that any peace, any agreement that is reached with the United States is not going to be fulfilled. There's going to inevitably be a drift back to war. The same will happen, for example, if Iran agrees to every one of America's demands, if it dismantles its ballistic missiles and stops nuclear enrichment. There would still be an attack on Iran because the objective is regime change.
Yeah. That's the neocon playbook. All right. We'll end it there. The Duran.locals.com. We're on X, we're on Rumble, we're on Telegram. Go to Duran Shop, pick up some merch.
Yeah.
We have a sale, 26% off all merch on the Duran Shop. So check that out. We are also on Substack as well. So definitely subscribe to us on Substack. Take care.